welcome to a bonus episode of the RSM podcast. Like I've said on the previous episode, Teen Witch, our main episodes are going to try and stray away from things like independent film, because I really don't like to make fun of people that do their very best with a very minimal amount of budget and such like. But
best is questionable.
Yes, and that's why, you know, this movie doesn't really make that cut, because it definitely had some money behind it, and I feel like its downfalls need to be discussed and it needs to be brought to justice. So tonight we are reviewing the 2014 release sci-fi independent film called Starship Rising. And Richard, what were your initial thoughts on this one?
I start watching it, and the first thing you get after you get this opening producer studio and everything like that, you get a talking head talking into a camera, and the camera is, I guess, behind a high-tech monitor going on here, and I immediately realize, like, okay,
somebody likes to play with After Effects.
Yeah, so someone likes to play with After Effects, but they have no, everything else they don't like. They aren't a big fan of the rule of thirds. They aren't a big fan of color correction.
They were a big fan of blur and lens flare.
Yes, yes. A lot of rack focus in this movie, even when it wasn't necessary.
From the Transformers school of movie making. Your initial thoughts, Zane?
I found it, the opening sequence, there's the exposition by the main bad guy during the opening credits. I thought that it was very cinematic. It looked really nice. But the music was overpowering the bad guy. I couldn't really get what he was saying during some parts of it. There was the HUD that was up in front of the screen for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Other than to maybe hide some bad compositing or something. But then there was a second set of exposition, which...
By our main character, Worthy.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Talking about his father being assassinated, which I felt could have been done differently. It could have just been mentioned or maybe had a flashback or something.
Well, the biggest problem I had with this movie, listeners, this is going to take a little bit of a different form than our normal episodes, because we normally like to go sequentially through the movie and talk about it in pieces. The problem with Starship Rising is that it is so disjointed and... everywhere at all, every time, that it would be literally impossible for us to do that with this movie. So what I'd like to do is just sort of give a brief 5 to 10 minute rundown of what this movie was about, what kind of happens in it, and then we can just go fucking crazy on it. And as you've realized, we are here not with our normal group. I've got Zane, who's been doing independent film stuff with me for... over a decade now.
Longer than I want to admit.
And Rick, who's a new friend and a coworker of mine, who is also a super big film nerd. You actually went to school for film, right, Rick?
Yeah, I went to California State University, Monterey Bay.
Oh, you're so fancy.
For cinematic arts and technology.
So, cinematic arts, did you feel that this movie clearly portrayed the art part of the cinematic arts?
Yeah, that's about what I felt about it, son. at my university, there was a compositing course. And at the end of each semester, the professors like to show off like what their students could do. So there would always be like a short film festival. They would just show like the class projects. And honestly, this film from the beginning, I was like, I'm pretty sure my classmates have done stuff like this within the course of one semester.
Yeah. With no budget.
While they were learning.
Yeah, with no budget. Just like, oh, you know what? Let's go out into the Fordor ruins and shoot something very short and then put a bunch of compositing on it and it'll look awesome. Only thing is this movie, it kind of wears on you really quick because there's so much stuff on top of everything.
Agreed. This movie is 90% cuts and exposition. And the rest is CGI, maybe 9% CGI and then 1% acting. So just to sort of give the listeners an overview of this movie, there are two main galactic fashions. There's the Federation, which is headed by Emperor Palpatine, for lack of a better word, a man they call Sovereign. And
no, that was straight Plagueis, man. That was Darth Plagueis if I've ever seen him.
And who speaks like this, like he's got a really bad throat infection.
Yeah, and it's that respirator after he got shocked up by Palpatine, I'm telling you, man.
There's another little bit of Star Wars I have to get to in this movie, and you'll probably have picked it out as well. So there's the Federation and then the Terra Nostra, which is like this super religious oligarchy where women get raped in the streets like constantly. And then, of course, there's the rebel factions. One that's just a regular rebel faction. Another that's made up entirely of women who are, down with the patriarchy and the oligarchy. And the main story behind this movie is the most technologically advanced warship that the Federation has, that has missiles that can basically destroy a planet with one shot, is commandeered by a conscientious objector, and both sides of the war spend the entire movie trying to find him to either kill him or recruit him. Meanwhile, there's a side story going on with Sovereign and the Emperor, and that's pretty much it. That's the movie. That's the baseline of this movie. Some main characters that we'll talk about through here. Our main character's name is Worthy. Although he wants to change his name to Trouble about halfway through when he joins the Rebels, but that doesn't take. I don't know why they even mention it. In the Federation side, on the ship that he takes over, there's the weapons expert, who don't remember his actual name, so I just call him Chunks. Because he's like the only overweight person in this movie. Then we have Captain Multiface. Who looked like she had a little bit too much Botox for 20 years straight. And
died very soon.
Yes.
Very quickly.
And then we have his initial love interest in the movie, who I've deemed Pilot Multiface, because she looked like a clone of the captain. Am I the only one that thought that?
Nope, I did too.
They look like they could have been sisters or...
Mother-daughter.
Mother, a really creepy mother-daughter. Yeah. And then there was the engineer, who was a contractor, who was kind of a mix between Kaylee and Wash from Firefly, and
I think he was the only one not wearing the electrical conduit on his costume,
and with the snorkel piece hanging off the shoulder. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, you mean he wasn't scuba diving?
Nope. Yeah, I thought this movie was about scuba diving when I saw the costumes. It's like, nope, no space, just scuba diving.
Yeah, we'll get to the aesthetic look of this movie, and there are some major things that I have to say about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of white people in this movie. I'm just gonna throw that out there just initially. This is like 90% of the cast is uber white,
like,
in this movie.
Like 95%.
95, and that's being generous. When one of the initial things I wrote down is when we meet Sovereign, who I'm probably just going to call Palpatine through this, because, or I'll call him Plagueis, because he's literally just a Star Wars ripoff, his entire character. He's meant to be this supreme evil badass, but he's so laughable the entire movie. Like, this movie is shot completely serious, but it plays like a parody because it's so bad. There's a part, and there's the cursing in this movie is also supremely out of place. Like, they think to make this dark character seem evil, like one of the first lines he says, "I am a fucking god, and just look at my fucking claw glove. I'm a god. I'm evil." And
so what I attest that to is kind of like the Spartacus effect. Like, they're like, we don't know how people would actually talk in this time, so we're just going to assume that there was just a lot of cursing all the time. So it's just going to be you'll have normal conversation, and then suddenly someone will be like, I am not a fucking Terranotian.
Yeah, this movie's acting was Kevin Costner in Prince of Thieves. Like, it was his accent in Prince of Thieves. You really weren't sure where it was going. You really weren't sure what it was supposed to start out with, and you really weren't sure how it ended up.
But in Prince of Thieves, you at least had Kevin Costner.
Now, there were beautiful CGI effects in this. The ship models were excellent, I thought. The planetary models were excellent for 3D modeling. It literally definitely showed that they put, you know, 97.5% of their budget into the CGI effects.
Did you notice that a lot of the ships did look very phallic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, the main ship totally looks like a cock and balls. Yes. Yeah. It's a giant cock and balls.
Yes, when you were telling me about this movie before I watched it, you were like, yeah, that you could tell this movie has a lot of ripoffs from like Star Wars. Like, it's really Star Wars kind of inspired. And then I watch it and I'm like, okay, we just went from Star Wars to Dune.
Yep.
Like, what happened here? This is a very Lynchian look to things here.
I'm not sure if Zane would have caught this. I know that you and I, Richard, we've talked at length about Star Wars, and we're huge nerds for Star Wars. But I do have to point out that, oh man, prop-wise in this movie. Okay, what made Star Wars so amazing prop-wise was that they took things that were just normal things, dressed them up a little bit, and boom, you had this classic, you know, that's classic ILM is thinking outside the box with what you have. The droids, the interrogation / spy droids that they had in this movie, did you recognize them?
I did not.
Really?
Was I supposed to?
I did not.
These were literally the toy versions of Darth Maul's probe droids from Episode 1. I used to have one of these that shot little foam discs at a infrared lightsaber that you had so you could practice your Jedi training. These were Star Wars toys of probe droids that in this movie were probe droids. Like, if the ripoffs of the plot and the subplot weren't enough for you, they literally had machines from Star Wars in this movie.
That sounds like the people who made this movie were banking on the fact that you wouldn't remember these droids from Star Wars: Phantom Menace. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you don't remember much from Episode 1, but I happened to just have one of these toys when I was a kid, and man, it's face slappingly. The other droids that they had were kind of cool. I mean,
there was a lot of close-ups of the droids, a lot of like extreme close-ups of the droids,
and you could kind of tell that they were made from coffee cans, mm-hmm. and like linebacker gear. At a lot of this movie's like armor and such was made from like football gear, very clearly. So two things. One, there's this huge space battle between the starship that is the most powerful starship in the galaxy and a couple of people that are trying to take it down. And first of all, they're firing at each other in space. There's a lot of sound, which, of course, space doesn't have sound. There's a lot of explosions, which explosions wouldn't work that way in space. And they're firing at each other, their explosions, but I didn't see a single munition fire from these ships. Like,
no projectile.
All the projectiles were completely invisible.
Yeah. Their explosions looked really good. They were high resolution, but like you said, they didn't belong in space.
Yeah.
So I don't have notes. I'm going from memory, and I have the film up in front of me right now, and I'm like, I'm doing some frame by frame, and I'm going scene by scene also.
Mm-hmm.
God, this movie is so blue.
Oh,
there's no reds in this whatsoever.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think that was probably intentional color correcting to you know, get rid of some of the crap that they had done. But the second thing is, during this battle, there's this conversation where he's like, shields are down already? Well, if you'd gone with the shields I recommended, and I wrote, and didn't build our targeting computer at Home Depot. Like, it's literally like a air conditioning duct with a crimping wire around it.
I believe there's a short piece of flexible sewer connection pipe at the very end of this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for the most advanced starship.
That's what I was thinking.
And
a can of spray paint doesn't cost that much.
The thing is, like, you have to really, like, admire, like, the old Star Trek, like, specifically, like, Next Gen. I'll have to say Next Gen, because I wasn't huge into the original series. those actors, when they were piloting the ship or talking to the screen, they knew exactly where to look. They knew exactly how to, you know, fall and move to make it look like the ship was being attacked.
And the cinematographers knew what the hell they were doing, too.
Exactly. And then, and in this movie, it's the exact opposite. Nobody really knew how, what they were looking at. Like both the pilot and Chunks, pilot Melty Face and Chunks, both looking straight forward. But when it shows a visual of the view screen itself, it's like in between them and circular. So where they're looking wouldn't have had, they would have been staring at a wall the entire time. Like there was a lot of screaming back and forth on this bridge that was very off and very forced.
The screaming almost seemed like a Tourette's-y type reaction for, right, for our main character, especially. Like it would come from nowhere. It'd be like, oh, we have your mother and your sister. We're going to kill her if you don't give us back the ship. Give back my fucking mother.
Yeah, like, my fucking mother. Well, the emphasis was always on the curse word, which is like, you know, acting 101. If you really want to emphasize cursing, if you're going to do it a lot, you don't put the emphasis on that word all the time.
Yeah, you emphasize the words, you know, around it.
Exactly. So like, for example, Plagius, Sovereign, gets a hold of one of these rebellion people. And okay, so we're gonna parallel this to Star Wars. What makes Darth Vader such an imposing villain in your mind, Rick?
Aside from the fact that he's a 7-foot-tall android or yes, cyborg with a red,
like, what about his stage presence?
He speaks very intently, and he doesn't. His voice is very like steady with no real temper behind it. He's cold. He's calculating.
What about you, Zane? What makes Darth Vader such an imposing badass?
I would agree with that statement, but also say that he doesn't flail about.
His movements are very focused and meaningful. Yeah, very focused. So in this, he gets a hold of one of these rebellious people, and to show his dominance over her, he literally slaps her around. And it is like the sound of slapping your dick on a slab of wet meat.
Like there like was a splat to it?
Yeah, he like knocks her out on the ground by slapping her. And then he goes, fucking rebellious cunt. I don't know what they thought they were doing with the dialogue in this movie, but they fell extremely short. They fell at the start line.
And I missed that because I was still laughing at how this super ancient bad guy is slapping this person around like a couple of grade schoolers having a fight.
Yeah. I would say also one of my biggest problems with this, and it's a problem that I have with a lot of movies, especially historical movies. But the makeup in this movie, especially for the women, was so bizarre. They either had these very light pastel blue colors on their lips and their eyelids, or bright pink, which was very, anytime they did a pink lipstick, it was very odd because there's no other reds in this movie. So it really drew attention. Everybody was made up like a Barbie doll. And you know, that's not how I like my sci-fi, and that's not how I like my historical. You know, I have the problem with like movies shot in the 1400s, 1500s where women have shaved armpits and plucked eyebrows. Like it irks me really bad, and it irked me just as bad in this movie.
Yeah, they don't seem very rugged for being in kind of a military unit or anything like that.
Yeah, they all just got done clubbing. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. And they probably had
the Sovereign's like left-handed person in the Federation is this woman called the Supreme Commander. She's got this sort of sexual thing going on with the main general in the Federation, who, I don't know if you noticed, has a bandolier of CO2 canisters, like little ones that you would put into a paintball gun, just strapped across his chest. It is so bad. Like if you're going to do that, you cap off the ends with something to make them look like something else. No, these had the little pinched ends, like all of his guns ran on pneumatic gases.
Obviously, this is the Great Airsoft Wars of 6634.
Fuck, man. Oh, man. Worthy, like I said, it becomes a conscientious objector, and basically disintegrates his captain on the bridge to keep her from firing one of their calamity missiles at Old Earth, which I guess is our Earth. His mutiny is successful with just him, and apparently everybody's like, okay, well, you killed the captain, so you're the captain. Apparently we're the Klingon Empire in this universe.
Did I look away from the screen when he killed the captain? Did I miss this death scene? Because I swear I was like watching it, and then suddenly he's like, I killed the captain. I was like, wait.
Well, and the thing is, it was in slow-mo too. Like, it was one of these, like, she's like, fire the missile. And he's like, no.
Oh, and he shoots her? Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, it's a cacophony of, what the fuck is this? Is this a fucking mutiny? Like, yeah, it's a mutiny. He just disintegrated your fucking captain.
That character was probably the best part of the movie.
Chunks?
Honestly, yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, he was like the guy who had been thrown into this universe where all this stuff is happening around him. And he's kind of trying to go with the flow. But in the back of his mind, he's like, this is fucking crazy. This is fucking crazy. This is fucking crazy.
God, what is that guy's name? Hold on. He looked like he could have been the nephew or son of the guy from Revenge of the Nerds. Curtis Armstrong. Is that him? Booger? Yeah, that's him. Curtis Armstrong. He looked like he could be like the really young nephew of Curtis Armstrong. And again, he was probably as rotund as three of any of the other actors in this movie combined. Always wearing the same scuba armor that everybody else is wearing, but it always looked like it didn't quite fit him. Like they didn't have enough time to outfit him with his own like properly sized Federation armor. And you know, I'm a chunky guy. I'm a portly fellow myself. And even I thought it was just bizarre. So we get our first, most awesome ship in the galaxy is getting destroyed scene of this movie, which again, that's about 30% of this movie is this awesome starship getting destroyed and then getting repaired and then getting destroyed and then getting repaired. Three times that happens in this movie. At this point, they're plummeting towards the planet.
And that's really when you get the real good look at that shaft of that ship.
Yeah. Just the air caressing it slowly as it falls towards its explosion. Mm-hmm. I wrote down, I know I'm supposed to feel immediate danger from the dialogue and from the scene that's happening in front of me, but due to their acting talent and just the overall tone of this movie so far, I couldn't. I was just, okay, they're falling towards a planet. Good on you. Then they're listening. Oh, who is it that's listening? I think it's the Supreme Commander is listening to the Holo News and listening to the what's going on. And of course, she's not just listening to the news. It's the Holo News, which makes it spacey.
Star Wars had the HoloNet, so I get it.
That's true, but did they have the HoloNet before the internet was created?
No.
They did. It just wasn't part of the story.
Did they?
It just wasn't part written into the story yet.
In the original three?
No, but how do you think they Skyped? Again, I have another note about how much bloom and blur there is in this movie. It's around this time we find out that Chunks is a total misogynist sexist. You almost think that he should be part of the Terra Nostra, not the Federation. probably totally a virgin as well. Oh, and also, anytime they received a hail in this movie or they were communicating over their space Skype, there was this frequency sound. Was that on your guys's, the versions that you were watching? It had this really high-pitched, worrying, weird sound anytime communications were opened on the ship. And it was like, and I literally almost had to turn it off just because of that sound, because it was so annoying. And it was during any time that the communication was open.
No, and later on, there's going to be another sound when they're doing radio communication between each other, which I swear to God, and I could swear because I just recently had to change the battery in this. It sounded, every time they hit the button on their freaking radio, it sounded like a fire alarm going
off. Okay, good. So it wasn't just me. Awesome. Oh, another thing is that anytime we go to a new planet, there's a planet title card for the planet. which is a little annoying when you do that initially. Like, just show the planet and maybe type out the name, like, you know, Naboo or something along across the front. But
they they got to give history to the planet, man.
Yeah, they did a full black title card with the population, even for a planet that we literally saw for 2 seconds, and then it was destroyed because they were blaming the insurgents for destroying the planet when it was really them. Completely obligatory, I thought. So it's at this point when they find out that the Federation is destroying planets and blaming it on them, they decide that, hey, we've stolen this ship. We have these missiles that can destroy pretty much anything. Let's open up communications. So they open up a galaxy-wide communication and basically say, make peace or we're going to blow up your fucking planets. This coming from the guy who 5 minutes earlier was telling the rebels that they were warmongers. Also, we alluded to earlier that Worthy, the main character in this movie, has he sort of narrates along with it in this inner monologue. Oh, man, every time he's speaking to his father in his head, I just wanted to, you know, I they put so much emphasis on his father in this movie, but we didn't really know anything about his father except for that he was a political dissident. Like, if you want me to care about that character, do a background scene before you start the movie and don't just narrate it and tell us how great his father was. Show us how great his father was. And
they had a background scene at the very beginning, didn't they?
But it was a narrated thing. It was like, I loved my father. My father loved me. He was a political dissident. Bang, he got shot. Now I'm all sad and I'm going to join the Federation and become a pilot. Like, you take it because you have so much ridiculous shit that you're spending time on in this movie. You take 10 minutes at the beginning and show us a flashback of him being with his father and show us his father being awesome and show him like instilling these ideals like, you know, war is not the answer. Political systems are all made up and they keep us fighting each other to distract us. Like, that would have been that would have been pertinent to the story as it went on. But as it was, I didn't care about the main character. I didn't care about his father. There's this secondary plot going on with Sovereign through this entire movie, which I don't care about at all because it doesn't make any sense in the context of the movie that I'm watching. And I don't know. Zane?
I caught that too. One of my notes is that it seemed like they didn't do a proper amount of character development with anybody in this movie.
Anybody at all.
And I caught that.
And the only characters that could have been interesting, they completely glossed over. I would have, I'm a Sith, you know, I'm a dark side user. So I would have loved to flesh out this Sovereign character a little more. I would have cast him differently. You know, not everybody has James Earl Jones' voice and, you know, the presence of Darth Vader. But like, you have to put effort into your bad guy to make me fear them. Otherwise, they're not, it doesn't matter that they're a bad guy. And so I would have loved to see him fleshed out a little bit more with a different actor. But also, the only other character that I really found interesting in this was the mechanics mechanoid that he had in his secret lair. The actor was intriguing as soon as I saw him. This like bald, pale guy who looks kind of weird, who had probably the best costume in the movie. And the rebel characters as well. We're never really told what they're fighting for, what their beliefs are. We don't know any of that really, except for that they're fighting an oligarchy and, you know, people get raped in the streets, which is good cause to, you know, fight against. But you're right. Character development was a huge issue in this because there was none. It was, here are some characters, here's the situation, have fun watching special effects. Like, yeah. That's all this movie was, in my opinion. And again, with the bad guy not being bad enough, like, he finds what he's looking for, which is some kind of ancient tomb with an ancient species DNA in it. And his most trusted, like, lieutenant has done all the legwork for this. He finds what he needs. He gets the planet. He's like, you've done well, Lieutenant, but I don't trust you. And I'm like, oh, good. He's going to take out a sword and fucking slice him down. But no, he takes out what looks like it's going to be a lightsaber. Right? You jump for a second, but it ends up being a spray. I was like, oh, okay, he poisons him. You know, he poisoned him and killed him. Not, that's not really that cool, but whatever. But no.
He maced him.
Yeah, it wasn't even a poison. It was some kind of suggestibility gas. And so the guy goes down and coughs and then stands up. He's like, jump over this ledge. So the guy jumps over this ledge. What is the point of that? He's a bad guy. He's a supreme bad guy. Why wouldn't he just kill him?
And under the zombie gas, he could have been better.
That's his Jedi mind trick, man. I'll be right back. I gotta make a bottle.
Okay. Oh, man. This bad guy is so fucking terrible. So we get a little bit more of the Lady Rebels, and they start communicating with Worthy, and they meet up, and we find out that Pilot Melty Face is actually a double agent. So she's, you know, she does make a good point. He's like, what the hell are you doing? She's like, I'm not turning back on the Federation that I swore my allegiance to. Like, you're the fucking traitor. What do you mean? What am I doing, you asshole? And because of that, the general CO2 Bandolier knows where they are at and comes and basically says, hey, Worthy, we have your mom and your sister, like, turn over the ship or I'll execute them. And Worthy's like, tries to negotiate with him. He's like, all right. And he slits the mom's throat. And we get Worthy's first no of the movie. So bad. So over and overacting. Like, if there was an overacting, he would be Everest on top of that. Like, so he meets them on the planet. They try and pull this little heist where they have a mechanic up on a ridge with a sniper rifle, which just luckily enough, the rebel girl that joined them brought along a bag of antique weapons, which is her collection that she loves to use. And well, wouldn't you know it, you can't use energy weapons on this planet. So they have the advantage. And so they have a sniper posted out up in the mountain. They go down. They have like... He has like a flintlock pistol or something like that. It's something fucking stupid, ridiculous. And the general, basically, they can't come to an agreement. So they start firing at each other. They have the drop on them. They have a sniper in the fucking, you know, in the mountain who could just be popping off these people one at a time or could have just directly been aiming at the general and shot his head off immediately. Like, but no. Everybody misses. They all went to the Stormtrooper Academy for firing, and General slits the sister's throat and drops on the ground. And we get, of course, his second nose of the movie. And again, I didn't give two shits about his mom or his sister. We didn't even know he had a mom or a sister that were alive until this moment.
Until the story needed it.
Exactly. We have all this, like, really terrible, but all of this exposition about his father and how much he loves his father and how much he misses his father, not once mentioning the rest of his family until this point. Exactly, until they needed it. So, again, just shit happening in this movie that I could care less about. Like, it's okay, this is supposed to be a story, but it doesn't really feel like that. Oh, and then at the same time, the sniper puts down his rifle and starts throwing bombs at them, little tiny missiles, sort of
little amber lights that go out and explode.
Yeah, that completely miss, you know, when they explode. We find out at this point that Space Pope, which I thought would have been a much more interesting plot for this movie, Space Pope, who runs the Terra Nostra oligarchy, and Sovereign, who runs the Federation, are one and the same. What? Say it ain't so. So the Lady Rebels have coaxed this out of one of the high priests and they broadcast it throughout the galaxy and they're explaining this and Blondie's like, I don't give a fuck. It doesn't have anything to do with the fight that I'm fighting. And I'm looking at her like, I get you, Blondie. I get you, because I don't give a fuck about that subplot either. There's no point to feel like that. Like, you have literally not built this up into anything that I care about at this point. And I will admit a bit of sexism when I first watched this movie, which was like, this movie came out in 2014. I feel like I saw this in 2012. But when I first was introduced to the Rebel Blonde character, I was like, this girl is super scrawny, looks like a Barbie doll. I am not going to, like, what terrible casting for this character. She turned out to be one of my favorite characters and probably one of the better actors in this movie overall. So I'll admit to that. First impressions, I was a little younger, but yeah, no, she was definitely probably the highest class of actor in this movie. So some other things happen that are unimportant because nothing in this movie is important. And, oh, we also get to find out that Supreme Commander's son was fathered by Sovereign, who is her half-brother, who raped her but doesn't remember that he raped her. And she told him that a Terra Nostra raped her. And so, it's this complicated backstory we get for a character that we met for 2 seconds that we don't really care about, with backstory that we don't really care about, that doesn't go anywhere in this movie. So they go up against the Terra Nostra and the Federation. Worthy hunts down the general guy and is trying to beat the crap out of him in one of these escape pods that looks like it's built entirely wall to wall out of milk crates.
It looked like an escape pod for cargo.
Yeah, that's
pretty much what it looked like. Oh, and I'm back.
Hey, good. You'd strap down a car in one of those things, And we find out that Worthy's mom and sister weren't really killed, that they were actually used replicants. So it's like, oh, okay. So that scene didn't really matter at all then.
It's the scene I wanted to talk about. It's okay. We'll go back to it.
Yeah. One of the things that was kind of the redeeming part of this movie where, the general is, you kind of feel that he's a bad guy because he works, as the high up in the Federation, and these are, they're led by the supreme evil dude. But at this point you realize, we use replicants. We didn't really kill your parents. I'm all about the Federation, what it stands for. And Worthy's okay, then I guess I won't kill you. And he's like, cool, then I guess I won't kill you either. And they just sort of stand there for a minute.
And this is why they didn't shoot him with the sniper rifle in the earlier scene. But at that point in the movie, these characters would have been, let's shoot the general in the head right now.
Yeah, let's shoot him, and then he doesn't have any leverage on me. We'll grab my sister. So they decide to destroy the ship. They fly it into another ship at ramming speed. And
the two tips touch.
They touch just the tips. I will admit, I'm having a hard time remembering how this ends because I have to ask you both.
You mean because it has no real ending going on
here? Exactly. So at this point, I'm going to have to ask you both. Starship Armageddon, part 2, which I didn't know there was a part 2 until tonight or last night when I watched this.
I thought it was Starship Apocalypse. Hang on, I'm going to go to this.
It's one of those two.
I believe it's Starship Apocalypse.
Yeah. Would the two of you be willing to come back at a later date and Starship. Review the sequel to this movie?
I intended to find that and watch it, yes.
All right. How about you, Rick?
it's
a big commitment, isn't it?
The commitments. I could do it. I mean, it's...
it's hard. I appreciate it. I trust that, I'll buy you a case of beer or something like that.
I'll watch it. I'll watch it with... essentially with the idea in mind of going okay, what improvements did they make in the second one over the first one?
Well, the thing is that the second one was released in 2015. So I assume that they probably shot them back to back and just released.
I'm guessing they actually shot them continuously. And then whoever the producer of this film was we can't release a 3-hour long movie. We aren't that big.
Yeah. Nobody will watch it then. At least a couple thousand people will watch it this way. So, it doesn't really end. It ends the way it begins with him giving the story about why he did what he did and who he is. Again, I don't give a fuck because your character is completely uninteresting. Yeah, so I guess we'll open up the floor then. That took about as long as I hoped it would. So
The character not being interesting, there was a small point near the beginning where he became slightly interesting to me, and that was during that disconnected cut between those two unrelated scenes in the beginning.
You mean, oh, wait, which two disconnected scenes?
He was talking to two girls about a crate, and he's being chewed out by the commander.
Right, okay.
Back and forth, they didn't seem to be related. And she asks, why did you join the Federation? He says, I wanted to be a pilot. And she slaps him. And I'm sitting there thinking, what did he do?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He answered her question.
He answered her question. And
also, that's abuse.
And that should be, and that should be against the rules.
Yeah.
And then later, he shows up on the bridge, and the captain says something about, if you weren't the only pilot aboard, you'd be on the brig right now. And again, I'm thinking, what did he do?
And he doesn't ever fucking fly the ship. It's always pilot Multiface that's behind the wheel.
Yeah.
So how does that mean he's not the other pilot that can fly this thing because somebody else is flying it?
Someone is flying it right now as we speak up here on the bridge.
It left me wondering, what did he do? Did they cut some stuff out of the movie and... Sometimes that happens.
You're right. There was a point at the beginning where we find out that I don't know if he's smuggling goods from the ship or if he's using his pay to buy food for. That must have been his mom and his sister then. Like that. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was two women. One was shorter than the other. I'm thinking it must have been his mom and his sister that he was giving.
With no real backstory or character development. We
don't
no
know anything
these
about
are.
These two people. Exactly.
Because they wasted so much time at the beginning trying to give, have him exposition talk to a camera, father. Trying to give his backstory. They honestly, so comparing this to another sci-fi film, I saw the movie Serenity before I saw the show Firefly.
Same here. Right? I was very, very confused about all the backstory I was missing.
Yeah, but at the same time, I loved the movie by the end of the movie. I was just like completely drawn into the characters. I honestly didn't even care. And when I found out that the show existed, I was like, oh, I gotta go watch this now. They honestly could have just cut off that first 20 minutes of this movie where they're doing all the like him getting beat up by his captain and all this other bullcrap. And they could have just like gone straight into the movie and I would have been fine. And they could have used that time elsewhere.
Let's get to this this thing that I like to do in these podcasts where we if we're going to use a term that I heard on one of the other podcasts that I love listening to, which is called God Awful Movies. And if we had crazy billionaire money and we wanted to remake this. Zane, I'm gonna start with you. What are some of the changes you would make to this?
Definitely character development. I would have replaced the first bad guy. Tried not to go so Star Wars-ish with him. I also got a hint of that too.
Yeah.
Just completely embrace the Star Wars-ishness. You take your $1 billion, you call up George Lucas, you're like, hey man, I got something for you, and I need you to make it smell like roses, please.
No Jar Jar, please.
No Jar Jar. Okay, so at the end of this, you have like a whole bunch of fighting going on with swords, and you have this like small little like planetary war going on. I would have started this movie over, and rather than make these guys like pilots and everything like that, I would have made them like space gladiators. Like, yes, they have ships, but they would function more like pirates than they would like Federation frontiermen or anything like that. They would I would want to lean into the savagery. So that way, when you reach things like the F-bomb or anything like that, it doesn't sound so out of place.
Yeah. And I mean, that's again, another thing is just the dialogue definitely was severely lacking in this movie. But yeah, like we said before, the cursing was completely out of place. There's a time and a place for cursing. I love the word fuck, you know, as much as the next guy. I usually only use the word cunt when I'm talking about Ann Coulter. But
I use it constantly when I'm doing a British accent.
Well, then that's acceptable, you know. It has to have a purpose. Like either it's commonplace for every single person to be using it all the time, or there's a time and a place for emphasis using swear words. A lot of swear words in your movie does not a good movie make. What about you, Rich? Crazy billionaire money. You get to remake this movie. Tell me some of the changes you'd make to it.
So, I would take a little bit of that money and I would go to a colorist and I'd say like, hey, I need you to do a little bit of, or I just give the money to myself and be like, okay, need to turn up the contrast a little bit. Need to make the skin tones to where they don't constantly just go to blue at certain points of this movie.
Yeah.
There are points in this movie where the faces are so blown out and they are against the background of the gray of their clothing or their hair because the contrast is so low on them. It looks almost as if though the movie was shot in black and white for certain scenes. Like, it looks really bad. And I get – I can't even say I get why it was done that way. I don't get it, dude. Like, I'm, like, looking at it. I'm like, okay, they're inside of a dark ship. I'm seeing a lot of lights in the background, but everything is lit too evenly. And for some reason, her face is completely flat. There's no detail to it at all. Like, I'm looking at this – the lady pirate, I think the one you call Melty Face.
Yeah, Captain Melty Face or Melty Pilot Face? Melty Face Jr.
Pilot Melty Face. I'm looking at her right now, and it's like – because the contrast is turned so low, like the lines in her face just completely meld in with the color of her skin. And so it just looks like blank. She doesn't look like a person. She looks like something out of a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, color correction, I mean – again, the most clear parts of this movie were the completely CGI in space shots, you know?
To the point where they stuck out.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. They looked like they were cut from a different movie.
Yeah.
And they very well could have been.
They very well could have been. So, yeah, I mean, there would definitely be a lot of changes I would have made in this movie. Done right with Crazy Billionaire Money, I could probably turn this movie into three movies instead of just two. Because I would, again, love to flesh out this whole Terra Nostra. Like, we get to hear sort of what they are and sort of what they're about. But I would like to live in that Terra Nostra, on a Terra Nostra planet for, at least 20, 30 minutes, knowing, you know, what exactly it is they go through, where the religious power comes from, how this rape affects the country and culture around them. Like, the one scene that we get to see is one of these pre-rebels gets insta-chloroformed. Like, he literally holds a rag on her face for 2 seconds and she passes out. And then he just drags her to a different room and starts raping her. And the lady rebels come in, kill him. And the first thing lady rebel does is go down, cradle her, and kiss her on the lips. Like, I understand that it was supposed to be like this like nurturing thing, but I don't feel like that's an appropriate thing to do to somebody who is just like drugged and raped is to like, kiss them on the lips.
Okay, I'm going to cradle you. I'm going to comfort you. And now let's make out while you're still under the effects of these drugs here.
And it was like, she kisses her on the lips and then she's like, hey, come join our rebellion. So yeah. So this woman was just traumatized and let's conscript her. Let's fill her head with rage and hate and give her a gun and turn her into a machine of killing. Like,
feel the darkness. Within you.
With the exception of G.I. Barbie, I wish I could remember her name. I think it's Jolie. With the exception of her, the female actresses in this movie were just as bad as the male actors. Like, there was one part that I thought was really well done, and I'm assuming it was because they got people that knew what they were doing. And it was during the street fight towards the end of the movie where the lady rebels are going against the Terra Nostra
where they're forces. All fighting in the alley.
And there's like three or four bulky, muscular women with guns and, tactical dress on. And they're doing, the SWAT commands with their hands. And they just like have perfect form as they're like stalking through these alleyways. I was like, they actually got extras that knew that what they were doing better than the primary actors knew what they were doing. Take some of that money out of the CGI. Like, that's another thing is I really wish people would understand that these movies were made, or sci-fi movies were made very, very perfectly well before CGI was a huge thing. So stop relying so much on computers. Start relying more on practical effects. I would love to see more models being built for practical effects, so that's another thing. Take some of that money out of the CGI budget and pay some actors to act in your movie. This movie felt like it was made with actors who were working for pizza and beer. Again, I really hate just harping on an independent film like this, but I think this movie is well deserved of it.
just do it, just Jeremy. Feel it. Just do it. Just harp.
Set harp within you, it. You know it to be true.
Darth Cooney is born.
Hey, don't say my last name on the
podcast. Sorry.
I'm kidding. It's on the actual podcast feed. Oh man. So okay. Go ahead, Zane.
I was going to say that is actually one of my primary complaints about a lot of low budget films that I see. Whenever they're supposed to be a air quotes special forces team, they don't act like special forces team. They act like a bunch of college kids that, mm-hmm. you know, let their hair grow long and they're talking back to the commander and they don't know how to hold the weapon or yeah. move or anything.
Well, it's like the primary lady rebel extras was a scene where the two main lady rebels were bringing guns to the other lady rebels, and they hand them these two like high-powered laser rifles. And the first thing to do is they turn it over their hands and point them directly at the two women that just gave them the weapons. And I'm threw my hands up in the air. I'm like, gun safety! First, you don't point it at somebody you're not intending to shoot. Second, get your fucking finger off that trigger, woman! Like,
obviously, they knew that the safety was on, Jeremy. Guns don't work the same way in 6634. Okay.
Oh man, it's so many
guns bad. Know who the bad people are and who the good people are, right? Obviously.
They've been programmed, they only kill men.
So in that scene, in that last scene, we see some of the Terra Nostrans coming in as the opposing force, right? And we see these two guys who are obviously stuntmen, they have masks on, and they do like these flips over some boxes as they're approaching the women.
They totally parkour
them.
Up.
Yeah, they parkour up. And first thing I thought was, I think I know those guys because I worked with some stuntmen on one of the films, student films I worked on back in university. Right. And I was like, even though I could only see their eyes, I was like, I'm pretty sure I know those guys. I'm pretty sure I recognize them. Second thing was, why would they spend money on getting stuntmen for this one scene for these guys to do these little flips over boxes and stuff when they couldn't spend money on getting stuntmen to do the fight scene between the general and what's-his-face, our main character?
Oh, that stage combat was so terrible. Like, I remember doing stage combat for plays in high school that was more well-choreographed than that was. They were so clearly pulling their punches. The choking was the worst choking I've ever seen in the bedroom or out. And you're clearly unimpressed up to this point in the movie. And then they start fighting in an escape pod that's moving at terminal velocity. And like my heart race probably even got slower than, you know, I should have been pumping with fucking adrenaline by this point in the movie. But I'm literally looking at my clock on my phone to see, you know, how much longer I have on this.
And I had given up on the movie at that point. So yeah. I was like, well, I expect it to be like this.
I gave up on this movie at the very beginning of it. I just stuck with it, though.
Yep.
I was like, okay, this is not going to become interesting at any point, is it? No, it's not. Okay, let's just accept the pain and just let it build up. And then I will express it once this podcast occurs.
Let the dark side flow through you.
Oh, I'm generating the dark side at this point.
Well, you know, Rick, I have it on recording, which makes it a legal binding contract, oral agreement that you're going to watch the second one all the way through and review with me. So you put yourself into that coffin, my friend.
I will shoot force lightning through this microphone, Jeremy.
If only. If we could shoot force lightning, Rick, you know mine would be more powerful. Zane, can you final thoughts on this movie?
Oh, I don't have any final thoughts.
No
on
final
this movie.
Thoughts?
No.
How about a rating? What would you rate this movie?
What was our scale system here?
Whatever you feel like.
Like 1 to 5 starships, or
how about how many calamity missiles would it take to destroy this disaster of a film?
About a quarter of an empty one.
Quarter of an empty calamity missile. All right, Rick.
I'm gonna give it a smaller dick ship crashing into a bigger dick ship.
Oh, so a docking movement then?
Yeah,
a single dock.
One docking movement.
So like,
one tip touch.
One tiny penis and one micro penis docking together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, at least they found each other, you know.
What would you give it, Jeremy?
Well, I was going to use Calamity Missiles as mine, but I gave that to Zane. So I am going to give this...
robot plot prompts.
I'm going to give this... I'll stick with the 1/4 because I think that 1/4 is deserved. I'll give this 1/4 rebellious cunts. Or should I say rebellious and coulters?
Rebellious and coulters.
So that does it for our bonus episode here of Starship Rising. I'm gonna would love to thank the two of you for going on. I have a lot of fun, and it's fun to do this with a couple of new people. I look forward to cringing through Starship. What was it? Apocalypse.
Starship Apocalypse. There's a subtitle to that title too.
What's the subtitle?
Oh, Starship Apocalypse, the Fury of the Overlord.
Oh yeah, so he's also called the Overlord. So we have three names for this guy: Space Pope, Sovereign, and the Overlord. Okay, Starship Apocalypse, Fury of the Overlord. Disaster extraordinaire, I'm sure. I'm going to be very happy to watch that and give it its fair justice over this microphone for whoever's listening. Thanks again, both of you. We'll be back on Monday with our regular scheduled episode where we'll be reviewing Ice Pirates. So that one should be a lot of fun too. And again, if you have any questions, comments, or you want to throw your 2 cents in about this disaster of a movie, please shoot us an email at watchthis@rsmpod.com, or you can join our Facebook group and send us a message through there. We'd love to hear from you. As always, please like, subscribe, and review, especially on iTunes. It really helps us out and helps us get noticed a little bit more. So thanks again, both of you. And for our listeners, I'll see you all on Monday.
Bye, guys. Peace, everyone.
Bye. The ultimate.
I can edit background. Your baby out.
Oh, no, you don't. If you edit my baby out, I will destroy every planet.